Blog Talk Radio.
Watching you as you're dreaming, the dreams I thought I knew. Your smile shows the reason I watched it all come true. Your touch is cold and distant,
even shy, saying words you cannot say. Welcome back, my friends, to the show where we pretend. I got to finish that line somehow. You've stumbled across A Team of Voices Radio. It's a Wonderland production. We are writers, a group of writers inside the biggest writing site on the planet, allpoetry.com. It's free to join. We have shows every night of the week. You're welcome to call in, meet the other hosts, other poets, same interests. The number here is 646-668-2837. Like I said, it's free to join. We have different prompts to write to most every night of the week. We have game shows, magic tricks, but we always have fun. With me tonight, I'm Jay Hunter, your host for the next 2 hours. With me is my partner, my friend, Deborah Lee. Hi, Deb.
Hey, Hunter.
So, the March 16th, the year of our Lord, 2021. Hope all is going well for everybody. A better rest there. Sounds like masks could be part of our repertoire for a while, huh? Wearing masks.
Yep.
It was funny. I walked into a liquor store the other day, well, the other week, and everybody's standing there in masks. If you'd asked me 10 years ago, 5 years ago, into a store with a hat and glasses and a mask on and get away with it. And you were fooled.
I know, right?
Seems weird. You know, it's like, I don't know if there's more eye contact or less. I think there's less. You're looking at your mask.
That's a
you
good question.
The mask come off.
Because, like, I don't know. All you can see
yeah.
now is eyes. I'm hoping we're looking at each other, you know?
I think we're looking at the masks. So when they come off at the other end of this tunnel, this thing, is it going to be a long? Because it doesn't take much to start a habit or an idiosyncrasy or something that you're not aware of. But well, tonight we've got some holdovers from last night. I think you said six. We'll go ahead and read. How many are on the recording? Do we know them?
From last night, there's six left over.
Are there any recorded? Or are we going to be reading them?
I have a couple that are SoundClouds and a couple that need...
Okay.
I think there's two that need to be read.
Go ahead.
Plus, we have AP. He has some... two that he had wrote, two brevities. So we'll play it by ear.
Yeah, it's sort of cool. I was going to try writing too. It didn't work out yet, but I'd still do it. I played ping pong in Jesus' basement yesterday. I know. I'm on good meds.
What did you say? I'm sorry.
I had a neat little idea of what to write to earlier today. And I was messing around trying to get some started. I played ping pong in Jesus' basement yesterday. I know. That's what I thought too. Didn't work out. We get here in my part of the country, in Northern California, we don't get much ice and snow, in fact, at all. And 3 days ago, over the weekend, Saturday, I think it was, we had a supercell come over the top of us and drop about a good 6 inches of hail and snow in a matter of just minutes. So everything was white. It was strange to see where I'm at. Well below the snow line. I can't remember the last time we had snow. I got a bad joke for you, though, Deb.
Okay.
I was wondering, you know, you hear about all these vampires in Europe through the years, but you don't hear of any in Africa. And so I was wondering, well, you kill vampires with holy water, right? And then it dawned on me, we bust the rains down in Africa.
What?
You got to know Toto, the song, we bust the rains.
I know the song. That's why I'm trying to figure out what the heck you mean. Look, in the counter, let me open the phone. It's Stephen and or Kay. Hello.
Hello. That means
hey.
It rains holy water in Africa.
That's right. It bust the rains down in Africa. It's holy water. I heard that today and I had to check it out pretty good.
Oh, my
God. So good. That's a bad joke of the day.
Just remember the Lost Boys. Garlic don't work, boys. Try holy water, dead breath.
There you go.
All right.
I wonder
if
you bless it yourself.
Huh.
If you're a minister and you bless it yourself, is that good enough?
I think it is.
It's holy water light.
Light.
In a pinch. We were all altar boys. We know all about the holy water.
If I can marry two people, then I should be able to bless the water. Just saying.
It's true. Should be able.
I got my credentials re-upped not too long ago. I get my ministry credentials company here in California. I have the ability to do the same.
I don't know if I have to update mine. I'll have to look.
I can pretty much automatically bend it since it sends you the new yearly certificate.
I know that you don't want to push it, and I know that Stephen doesn't have a really long time, so. I want to try to get these palms. Let me at least put one on. Let me do the. Stephen,
sure.
Do you have time for me to do the two sound clips from yesterday? Or do you need to read and go right away?
No, I could hang for a little bit.
Okay, cool. And I
is Miss Devis
just
there with
me?
Huh?
She's soaking in the snub.
Excuse me, sir. Perfect.
That's one of my favorite things to do is soak in the tub.
Yeah, she had a really long day.
Yeah, she said she was busy and cleaning and catching up on things. And
this is the time of year everything slows down. Everybody's got things started usually. We die down a little bit in the springtime, don't we?
Yeah.
Spring cleaning. Let me let Frank in.
Snowstorm.
Hello there, my friend.
Hi, Frank. Welcome to the
hey,
show.
Frank.
Hello there.
Hey,
it was
Frank.
A pleasure, my friends.
Hey, today is National Freedom of Information Day. Hooray.
Oh, wow. I wasn't aware of that.
Quite interesting. Look on the board. I posted Gerald. We're gonna kick off with him since we most often end with him. So let's click on his poem and hear what he's got to say.
Phoenix, written in red by Gerald Green. She found the banished text inside the drawer and then removed it just to take a look. Her uncle told her he'd be jailed and killed if he was known to have this dangerous book. All knowledge written here must be destroyed, and no one could repeat the legend's theme without the penalty of death. As if it were a dark and dreadful scheme, the government had banned the tale. So this was, in the end, the only copy left. She locked the study door and turned the page to read and learn why it should be suppressed. A story told about the phoenix bird who lived 500 years before it died in fire. Its nest consumed but giving birth, in spite of nosy scientists who tried to kill the new one rising up, who quickly fled. It seems there was but one who met the bird and told about it in this book. His name was David, who the old one let come very close and get to know quite well. It had the stamp of genius on its brow, a light red crest displayed with dignity. It flew him everywhere and did allow him to return each day. The phoenix lived upon a mountain, hidden by wild shrubs, surrounded by a crevice with sharp edge, above the noise of traffic, fires, and floods. Its neck was eggshell colored and its feathers butter smooth, while wings were milky white and strong with slender charcoal colored feet. The phoenix was a bright, impressive sight. Behind his uncle's farmyard, David climbed across a brook and up the mountainside. Its butterflies and flower blossoms bloom in nature's garden, where the view is wide. Among the drifts of goldenrod and phlox, the air is pure, allowing birds to fly with no concern of danger, catching updrafts easily in mountain's sprawling sky. she read the banished words that David wrote and learned the mysteries of the golden bird, then put the small book in its secret place and marveled how her heart was newly stirred. End poem.
That's a little more to the Phoenix than I remember.
Well, his is based or inspired on David and the Phoenix by Edward Almondroyd. And you know, it's already amazing, but just because I know that he had went back in to try and thread some of the word bank in, I think this is the one I'm trying to find. But like his details and stuff here, yeah, see, I see goldenrod, some of my crayons and stuff. So he had wrote the poem and not realized that there was the word bank and went back and threaded some in. And it's a fabulous story. And I, you know, all his stuff, we always enjoy listening to him read, but he's got great details and stuff here. Like where she locked the study door and turned the page to read and learn why it should be suppressed. It's like the entire fairy tale is spun around that book I had mentioned and the photo. And you can see her sitting there with her book, and there's a dragon flying inside those pages. And I think that he absolutely enchanted this photo prompt. Man, David climbed across the book and up the mountainside. It's butterflies and flower blossoms bloom in nature's garden where the view is wide. Gorgeous. And like I said, enchanted is the word that comes to mind. Awesome, Gerald.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
This is like his own version of it then, of a tale, right? Or is this actually...
Hatter, are you muted?
Well, shoot, can you hear me?
Oh, it was my stupid phone. I hit the speaker by accident, and there was no sound. Sorry, Hatter.
That's all right. No, I was just curious if he expanded on his own story of the Phoenix. I mean, wouldn't you say, Stephen? Am I right, or is it part of the legend?
I don't know. I mean, it does say it's inspired by a book that I've never heard of, David and the Phoenix. I don't know. To me, it made me think of the old book burnings in the past and the books that have been banned because someone deems it wrong or offensive. And I told him in my comment that it should be someone's choice if they want to read it or not, not some government officials, you know, making a rule against it. I thought, but yeah, also very beautiful imagery, I said. I thought it's a really cool poem.
Yeah, and he's got it in quotes, inspired by David and the Phoenix.
Yeah, I've not heard of that.
Yeah, me either. I'll just look into that and check it out. Frank, what did you think?
Well, I thought, as always, with our good friend here, he brings always a map of rendition, and always insight as well. There's a sense of wisdom as well in his words. I thought the reference to the Phoenix and the rhyming scheme was superb, and the storytelling as well was excellent here. I too was drawn in by the reference there to the banished books there, and the reference to the government, and I would say the destruction of what is really literature. And it did conjure the thought to me of the Inquisition, unfortunately, the Spanish Inquisition, one which is so dreadful, but yet it was so real. And nowadays, we don't see to the full extent governments are burning as many books as what was before. But this is a stark contrast, really, to what society, the evolution of society, and above all, the preservation need. Preserving literature, however opposed we may be to that literature, it is deserving of its place in our history.
I saw in the history, in the comments, he said that he had read the book in middle school. So it is a book.
Yeah.
It's been around. Cool. I love the way he writes. It's historic.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah, I totally agree. Absolutely. All right, well, I put R.F. Morris on the board. If you want to click on that, I'll play that one.
Walking through the chopper, it's been a fateful old pan, about to bring it to life. Two kick start is the plan. It's freaking hot outside, air is still, nary a sound, some people milling about, familiar oil spot on the ground. Check the ratchet top from the 60s, four speeds, hand shift into neutral, done dirt cheap or dirty deeds. Prime the SU, set the choke, leather boot on the kicker, retard ignition, a deep breath, not for some uptown city slicker. Crowd is inching closer, building is the pressure, one kick for prime, one kick for pleasure. Panhead roars to life, little girls start to cry. Older men nod their approval. The big girls let out a sigh. Engine enters a steady lope. Transmission with its whining note. Dry clutch and its constant rattle. Ground shaking at the field in battle. Straddling the Cobra seat. Worn boot on suicide pedal. Crowd never seen such a sight. Motorcycle version of heavy metal. Jockey shift into first. Clutch pedal slowly ease out. Wicked smirk on the face. Now that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, sound of a Harley. That's one thing you don't see too much of are the choppers. Choppers back in the day, used to see them all the time.
Yeah,
sound.
That was really cool hearing the bike purr in the background.
Yeah, idle, you tune it a little rich. Because that something is just about ready to die. It's got that certain, the sound probably needs to be patented. Adding the sound, that's interesting. Somebody's got a soft tail before. One kick for prime, one kick, second for pleasure.
These are done. I like that one too.
Yeah, the Shakespeare, I like Battlefield. I remember down in the Bay Area on Halloween, late at night, you'd hear the Hell's Angels come roaring through town. They'd come up into the suburbs just to shake the cage. They never caused any trouble, but there wasn't a whole hell out of it. But it was like a NASCAR race. Freaking ground shook.
Yeah, I like that he spun it into a story, but he's getting so talented with it, the background and the details. And I see here, looking on the side, that it's also a pending pick for the front page. That's really awesome. Great job, and thank you for sharing it with the show. Very much appreciate it. What did you think, Frank?
As, he mentioned in a comment, that's his mic in the background, you heard.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Excellent. Go ahead, Frank.
No, I thought I'll let you finish it. I thought this piece, this was a cool piece, and I thought the soundtrack was cool as well. And I did catch on to the sound of the bike in the background, and I thought it was on spot there with, I noticed that he went a bit, perhaps it was me, but I couldn't really hear him too clearly. Maybe it's because the tone of his voice was much more soft to hear, that I wasn't able to hear him completely. But I thought he did an excellent job in conveying the story and the power of what it is to ride the bike itself and how it it makes him feel, because there's a certain emotion that we get when we're drawn to something, of, you know, when we have something that we enjoy doing, and when it's something as palpable as this, you realize that that what he's describing, he has a deeper feeling, a deeper sensation, and it's. I sensed this when I was hearing this piece here.
The first line, too. That first line made me think of a movie.
Oh, which one?
Get to the chopper! That one.
Yeah, that was one of two rules in my mother's house. For she had five boys. No motorcycles, no tattoos.
My dad had something against motorcycles too. One of his friends was killed as a, you know, when he was a teenager. So I used to sneak over to a friend's house and ride with her.
My dad tells a story. He was in the Navy in Korea, and he was stationed out of Georgia. And they came back to port, and two of his buddies and himself had bikes stored there. And they were going in. Two buddies were going tandem in front of him, going to the shop to get the other guy's his other friend's bike out of the shop. We're around the corner, a guy hit some gravel and slid underneath a semi. And my dad sold his bike right there at the scene for $1 or something. Got rid of it, never got on another one. And I've lost several friends in my lifetime from bikes, right on bikes. So it's usually not the bike rider. It's the ones that they just don't see them.
Yep.
Yep.
But there's a certain resilience to getting behind one. It's been years since I've been on the back of one. Probably I'll never do it again. I respect the power. Well, this is excellent.
Absolutely.
Were these just written for a certain prompt or a picture, or just to drop
that
in?
That particular one was just put on the board for the open poetry. Gerald's was left over. Stevens is open poetry. I was going to go like back and forth. I did a leftover and then an open. And then I was going to do a leftover and then Stevens. So that sounds terrible. But Frank, would you mind reading Titus's poem from last night?
No, just bear with me.
Oh, never mind. How about, would you mind reading Budo's? I just realized that Titus added a SoundCloud to his, so I will add that. But would you mind reading for Budo? I'll go grab the poem.
Do you want,
sure
is that,
that
is that, I see Stephen's poem on there.
Yeah,
I know, I messed it up. I'm trying to do 1111, so I'm going to put this one on, and it's from last night, and then we will do Stevens,
right,
which is from tonight. So I put them up backwards. But if you would read Buddha's, I'd appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure always, my dear. This is a piece here by a good friend here. Buddha is called Quandary, and it goes like this. The Shashe is in sequence. Amulets, conundrums, teal skies, effervescing a waist high, bouquet of blossoms, satellites, satin-bordered gondolas, purvey, hymned, stitch hedges. Scooching crowd upon marigold, she shifts gracefully to lockstep, or underneath splayed patches, eggshell stain, corduroy draped the ligature, seeping sweet milk, condescent and runaway streams, echoing a pathway onto scorched parchment. Tree of knowledge beckons the call of denim butterflies, whom flagellate in ecstasy clusters, conjuring goldenrod, prize falcon for intercept, capturing classic kaleidoscope colors in a cornucopia a minutia, half-eaten by voracious zebra, neighing in wandered lapses, in ponderous taps of delirium, deeply embedded in verdant clover, indigo. So, it's a lot of good words there, a lot of metaphors as well.
Great read, thank you. I love that title, Quandary. And the picture's just so cool. I couldn't wait to see what he did to it. And I love that it starts out with sheet sachets and sequins. Really cool. Cumulus quandrums and teal skies. How about this wording? My goodness. A pathway onto scorched apartment. Tree of knowledge beckons the call of denim butterflies. I kind of like the idea of denim butterflies. I'd wear them. Capturing classic kaleidoscope colors in a cornucopia of minutiae. Really, really cool. You did a great job with this, Budo. I forgot we had a word bank last night. I think everybody jumped on this word bank and did such a fabulous job that it was not obvious anybody was trying to put words in. It was so awesome. It was like from long stories to short stories, people just blew me away with their use of them, and Budo's no exception. You read, Frank, what did you think?
No, I thought this was an excellent piece. Obviously, the metaphors were exquisite and the usage of vocabulary as well. But I have to say that I was taken aback by so much of the word. Here, the metaphors here, in, of course, the introduction of the word bank here. It is very difficult, you know, at times to be able to incorporate so many words into a structured poem that makes sense. And I think Budo here was able to do that. And I thought it was so down, if I can say the word down, it was so damn effective with the usage of the words of the word bank that he created a colorful piece here. I mean, that prompt is very colorful in itself. To come up with all these words and display them here in a poem in an effective way, you've got to appreciate it. You know, it's something to take your hat off because it's not an easy thing. You did it in a good fashion.
Awesome comment.
Okay.
And Stephen, will you comment for Budo and then read yours for us?
Yeah. I want to make sure I wasn't muted because the cats were getting ready to go at it. Okay. No, I'm not. All right. I like this a lot. The imagery that he uses, the way he words it, to me, I told him in my comment, it had me picturing Marilyn Monroe, actually. She came to mind with these words because she owned everybody's eyes when she walked by, and that's kind of what I got out of this. I thought this was awesome.
Great comment. Yeah, that is cool, isn't it? She owned everyone's eyes as she walked by. I love that. Take us away, sir.
All right. Well, tomorrow is my favorite day of the year. And, Frank, I'm glad you're here because I actually talked about this poem last night. I had read about banshees and how they each family has their own banshee, And if the Banshee liked the family, they would usually be singing out of concern that somebody's about to pass away. But they're also roped to Ireland itself. They cannot leave Ireland's soil. So I wrote this wondering how many Banshees are on the west bank of Ireland screaming towards America. And my Irish side is the Haddon side. So this is called the Haddon Banshee. Oh, my long-lost relative, on the shores of Ireland you stand, wanting to warn us of impending winters. Once again, you raise your hand. Are you a cousin more than three times removed, or an aunt or grandmother so great? A lineage I still need to trace so far back, a need for knowledge to sate. Your hand is now pointing westward across the ocean so wide, perhaps this time to let Jack Haddon know that he'll be rejoining his bride. In America is where we are now, while you are bound to where it's green. You stand by the seaside and point towards us, and open your mouth and let out your keen. As loud as you can, you cry to us, but your tears are lost in the sea, trying to tell us that death is near, but we are quite deaf to your scream. Your head now hung low as you feel you've failed, but your efforts not wasted on me. Perhaps in the afterlife we'll meet one day, and I'll pay my respects to thee.
And let's see, the legends suggest that each Irish family has their own banshee. I thought it was something you heard from the ships. You heard banshees cry from that end, from the shores. Is that not right?
No,
oh, it was the shores.
It's
Oh, okay.
I think that the details here are really, really cool, Stephen. And as you were reading, I was listening to your rhyme and your flow, and you seem to have really turned into a master with your lyrical flow and the rhyme. And it's really awesome to see. And down towards the end there, and as loud as you can cry to us, but your tears are lost in the sea, trying to tell us that death is near, but we are quite deaf to your scream. It's like, for some reason, I was left with that one, thinking about the things that we see coming but try to ignore or pretend we don't see. And then by the time we realize that we should have paid attention, it's kind of too late. But anyway, like I said, the details, I like the title too, the Haddon Banshee. It's amazing how many different myths and legends are out there. And we're just talking, just take one thing, like you said, like Irish legends. Imagine their list and then start tracking them from around the world. There's so many. It's incredible. Oh, and by the way, there's something really awesome about the background picture you chose, too. Those mounds and the way they're shaped and all is really awesome. Great job.
Thanks, Deb.
And congrats on the gold, I see. Woo-hoo. What do you think, Frank?
Oh. I thought this was a wonderful rendition here. I too agree with his impeccable rhyme here, and I did notice Stephen he had a soothing cadence here. I think the way he was reading it, it was more of enticing there the lecture of the reader, and it's always good when you do these narratives here or storytelling that you always find a little. Your pitch as well, and find the moment where you just completely entice. You keep enticing, drawing in the reader until you finally get to that point where the reader is just drawn there with her fingernails bite. I think this is one of these great pieces here. I mean, I did the Bounty yesterday on his show, and his Bounty version was just as great. I love the lore here. You know, the explanation here, how it is akin to. Your background, your heritage there. I wasn't aware that there were banshees to that name. But then again, I don't know I'm not too well informed with the Irish names. But I thought it was thought it was good. I love the way you began it, using a Victorian word there with O, which at times it's lost here. It's more of O as an up. But here you start up as more of a mystery there. You say, O, my long lost relative. That in itself makes this poem even more excellent here, because you draw us into that first word there, just that letter there, O. And I thought what you described here was very powerful and very profound. And I like that you added those details, the historical references as well. You did an excellent job of it.
Thank you, Frank. Appreciate it.
Is there a common denominator being death is near for hearing the Banshee scream? Is that common?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Depending on which legend you refer to, but the one that I like is that every Irish family has their own Banshee, and it was somebody who died long ago, and there's two different ones, one that liked the family and the other one that hated the family. You want to prefer to have one that liked the family because it's going to be nicer to you. But yeah, when you hear the Banshee, they're telling you that somebody in your family is going to die. The evil Banshee is happy about it. The other one is sad.
Wow. That's pretty cool. I keep thinking of, who was it, Darby O'Gill or one of them? Isn't that what he talked
yes.
about in his...
I couldn't believe
I saw hit the face of the actor and remembered his name. It was like, whoa, it's been 100 years since I came close to seeing anything like that. So let's listen to Titus, and then we'll get Stephen to push his next show. So click on that, and I'll push play.
The Garden of Eden.
Titus, got it.
Well, it's you and I against the world, honey. Under a sky of teal, we will be safe for a while. Beyond the weeping willow, no way of criminy. It will divert overhanging to hide us in exile. Like a giant gazebo, it is given each a caress against your cheek. Private places bordered by a multitude of colors. We're more or less camouflaged by hedges, obliviously cornered. Mind you, in turning bisque is given to mislead the cornucopia of perfume, the blossoms still beneath us, softer silk. A couple whose need was catching sight of the birds and bees until we are locked like honeydew. Close together. The ivy meantime gives us warmth. It climbed beyond the wall. It holds much of our weather. Lie among the bordered plants, we're confined. We're hiding within the rain of the golden rod. Your face as smooth as eggshell, a softer sheen, the slightest touch will give the gentle prod, which shows how virtuous the depth of green. Other than the vine which continuously grows, it's walked beyond the reach of what's beautiful. Would I not have marched within these throes, a military style facade that love remained dutiful? It is a Garden of Eden given that a clean slate, the pathway to new worlds our own will create.
Wow. Go ahead.
So you supplied the picture?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was honestly rubbery surprised that he chose this one. You see the superheroes on there now? And then to read it in a Garden of Eden poem, it's quite amazing. The poem in word, in feel, in the way he is one of the, I think I mentioned on one of the other shows that we have several poets that really, really love the word banks. Titus is one of them, and he is always remarkable when he uses word banks like if I see him or Alf or a couple others in a contest with a word bank. To be quite honest, I don't even try because they are mind-blowingly good at word bank, and this shows it. I mean, well, it's you and me against the world, honey, and I know whenever he talks of those type of endearments that he's talking about his beautiful wife, his angel. But the vision that he creates here, the descriptors are really breathtaking. And I was trying to put my finger on what the tune was in the background, and I couldn't. So I'm going to have to try to remember to ask him. But it went perfect with this. It set a tone for the mood along with his words. As always, a brilliant, brilliant job with the word bank. Thank you so much, Titus.
Yeah,
and you know what? I am so happy. You know how I usually
right.
get really upset when we have leftover poems, but I'm absolutely thrilled this time that we were so packed that we didn't get to this because yesterday it did not have that SoundCloud attached. And I would have read or you know, had someone read it. And by it being a leftover, or I'm sorry, not a leftover, a carryover, I got to hear him read it himself. So what a gift. Thank you so much, Titus. What do you think, Steve?
Yeah, I like this. I actually eyeballed that picture myself for a little bit, but I moved on to the picture of the dolls. I like this. I told him in my comment that sometimes it definitely can feel like the world is against you, but when you're in a team like he's describing, you can be unbeatable. But I also said it could read that it's you know, you and your mask against the world in today's current events. But yeah, excellent right.
Yeah. If you put the giant gazebo as some creature of war, the giant gazebo creeps up, you know. You would need to corral. Yeah. It's your gazebo, man. How to attack loose.
Is it Jack Lemmon that I'm going to gazebo?
Trying to figure out what that little sliver down by their chin, and then it's laid over to the right in color. Love pictures like that. Hello.
What do you think
Frank? Did you say my name? Okay. I thought this was a wonderful rendition of superb language and usage of word bank. I have to echo what you said about the usage here of the word bank itself. You know, it is difficult to try to, once again, I seem like I'm repeating myself, but to be able to incorporate so many words of a word bank into a piece and let it and structure it in such a way that it sounds credible. It's a feat in itself. And coming from Titus, he seems to always have an knack for an ability, I would say, to write, use words as if they were his own utility. What I mean by that is that he has no difficulty with the words themselves in just conveying a poem. And I think this poem, of course, has relevance, as what you said before, because there is an inspiration here. His wife, I would believe. But I thought this piece overall was a fantastic piece here. He did a great job, in particular on the word bank.
Awesome comment. And say hello to the Wizard from Oz. Hey, AP.
Hi, AP. How are you?
Hello.
Hello there.
Hey, AP.
Hey, hello.
Oh. Hanging in there. How are you?
Yeah, good. No, just my mum came over to visit, and He has taken away three of my shirts that my bony elbows have put holes in to create short sleeve shirts out of long sleeve shirts.
Oh, cool. Did you bring you any jelly beans?
No, but I bought some earlier. It's okay.
Oh, cool. Okay. Stephen, did you want to push tomorrow's show?
Yes. See, over at A Poetic Slice of Life, tomorrow is my favorite day of the year, St. Patrick's Day. And so we're going to celebrate a little. And we've got 20 fun Irish sayings as the prompts to write to. And there's some really cool ones. The one that I decided to write to was, where is it at? Many a person's mouth has broken their nose.
Okay, I'll have to check out the quotes. Wow. Sounds like fun. Oh, my goodness. So, AP, I thought I would have you read one, then Frank will read his, and then you could read your other one. Does that work?
Sounds good to me.
Okay, one's on the board, so take us away.
Okie dokie, I will. Which one is on there? Let's have a quick look now. And it'll tell me.
Daybreak?
It is. Daybreak. Oh, I like this one. It's my favourite one. This is Daybreak. Lovely, lovely image there. It goes a little bit like this. We caress the radish red gases, their charcoal streamed as whey. Within swirl pumpkin masses, tucked upon a cherry pathway. Kaleidoscope streams mosey into a gaseous expanding array. Posts tucked in a fiery posy. The thorns are sharp in bouquet. Soon squirrels with lava sweet. Stars catching jewels upon prey. Waiting until blooms recede. In petals of a rose. Find the day. End poem.
That was cool. I wasn't expecting the red gases, but they work because, like, the roses burn in there. Kaleidoscope streams mosey into a gaseous expanding array, posts tucked in fiery posy, the thorns as sharp in bouquet. Really, as usual, awesome. Rhyme, awesome flow. I forgot it was a word bank. I can't even express how these word banks are just, and they've been blended. Everybody just blew me away. Poem after poem after poem. I forgot, and now I'm looking and I'm thinking. You know, I am not as good at the word banks as some of you are turning into. Between the visuals, the rhyme, the flow, the word bank use. It's really, really cool. And I like stars catching jewels upon fray, waiting until blue. I'm going to stop because I have to leave something for somebody else. But I think my favorite is the middle. A really great poem, as usual. What do you think, Heather?
Yeah, seeing the swirls of lava sweet stars catching jewels upon fray, made until blooms recede and petals of a rose find the day. And I also like that you used posy as a generalization of flower, post tucked in a fiery posy, as a posy. Yes.
Thank you, Heather.
Nice again.
Thank you.
You called on me, right?
Sure.
Okay. I thought this was I like the way he took. I mean, it's a brevity, but I like the way he just brought to life that prompt there. You know, the imagery is powerful just looking at the prompt. And reading his lines, his stanzas. It makes it even more powerful. When I think of the color of red here, it's so encompassed here in a natural way. In the way it just evokes the prompt there, I thought it was excellent here. I love the way you carried on in the reference as well to the thorns, and then you went on to say, ending, you said, waiting until blooms recept in petals of a rose, find the day. So you took the prompt from the beginning, and you ended it you began it with an excitement and an interest there, a mystery, and you brought excitement there till the end, and it was such an eloquent way. I would think that this was a very eloquent piece there, and such a brevity that you wrote.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you.
Are you welcome?
Awesome comment. How about you, Stephen?
I'm having technical issues here.
Oops, he had to drop. Thank you for calling, Stephen. See you tomorrow.
Yeah, thanks, Stephen.
Did you comment, Heather?
I'm having technical issues. My volume thing has come back to me, okay?
And Stephen just lost power, so that's what happened to him.
Just click.
And see. Frank, why don't you go ahead and read yours for us?
All right. This is a piece here I brought tonight. It's called To Accept Oneself. And it was inspired by several individuals, but one in particular who inspired me with a piece that was written about how difficult it was to just shed the skin of not being accepted for who that person was. So this is my outlook here and a little bit of philosophy there to that certain situation. It's called To Accept Oneself, and it goes like this. To accept oneself is the acknowledgement of one's true self with undeniable imperfections and truths. Man must discover who he is and who he is not, to be remembered for what he accomplished and for what he failed in. There are many forms of illusions, as there are many forms of truths. The answer lies in the relativity of what is discovered. Man may never fully understand the reason for which he was born, nor the reason for which he must die, except for the fact that he will be born and one day die. He will embark on a philosophical or spiritual journey till he reaches the zenith of enlightenment, an enlightenment of the mind and soul, to a place in the mind where he can recognize his faults as much as his deeds. That will distinguish, ultimately, his character. In the world we live in, there are people that never discover themselves or never desire to know or care who they really are beyond the surface of the skin. Men neither boast of their conquests or simply deny the wrongdoings, yet what they hide is always unveiled. In this world, a man chooses to define himself or allows others to define him so cowardly. A man must be his own man and not walk behind the shuttle of no man, including the image that is his impostor. The beauty I talk about is not that which forms or deforms our physicality. Instead, it is the beauty of the soul and of the mind. I accept I am a man of imperfections, but my imperfections are not my impurity or ugliness. There is a greater need to do for others than do for yourself, for this is the difference between a real man and a selfish man. I am a man that has a name of no prestige. I am a man walking alone, yet I do not fear the unknown. On the contrary, I know who I am.
Ooh. Great ending. Great poem, but I really love the ending. We see back to a place in the mind where he can recognize his faults as much as his deeds that will distinguish ultimately his character in the world we live in. There are people that never discover themselves or never desire to know or care who they are beyond the surface of the skin. That is so sadly true. Everybody's always trying to be someone else or one-up someone else, and not many people are comfortable in their own skin. But
Well, you got to be careful too.
Yeah. Well, even on a sort of a joking way, you start off the show by saying you're pretending to be somebody you're not, or somebody else, or something. So, like, even jokingly, we're not comfortable in our own skin. But I like the way he closed this out. I am a man that has name of no prestige. I am a man walking alone, yet I do not fear the unknown. On the contrary, I know who I am. It's a hell of a statement. Great poem.
No, thank you very much.
Yeah.
I hope it does inspire those who read this poem.
Yeah, the line, there is a greater need to do for others than to do for yourself. To approach somebody to do something for them is walking to them to start a discussion is very uncomfortable anymore. They always look at you as a stranger, somebody that almost to fear until they don't. Poorly said, but some of the acts of kindness that I would go through, you see somebody needing help, you just go get what you're doing and go help them. They always think that you're wanting something from them. They don't, even to this day, people think, yeah, maybe you're doing it for me. Maybe I'm doing it for myself, not for you. So that was a great line in there, to do for others than yourself. It does separate who you are. And like you said, Deb, not being uncomfortable in your own skin. I don't know how much that says to that, but it almost is exactly that. Self-confidence can be looked at as aggression.
Yeah, well, that is always twofold there, after, as I can say. There's always the impression that, unfortunately, in our society, that there is the dilemma of the ego, actually the dilemma of vanity than modesty. And there is a difference there where what you are suggesting there, it is at times difficult because one perceives differently than others. So when we think that we are doing good, perhaps the other person who we are doing good is skeptical enough to think that we are doing, on the contrary, bad. So that is where the dilemma lies in our society. We have mistrust, unfortunately. So when I say the greater need to do for others, naturally that's just it is an implying there that we should do, not just think of our selfish ways and do for others. But at the same time, I do agree that it is difficult, unfortunately, in what was going on of what our generation and what our society imposes, that the perception at times is misunderstood. And this is the one thing that I always understood of Wilde. Oscar Wilde was always beyond his time, and unfortunately was always misunderstood. So this is still haunts us to now, even after years of his death. Is that quote there for me always, when he always implied how desperately he was misunderstood by society, that we still can say even now, hundreds of years since he's been dead, since 1900, a century or so, that there's many things in life that are so freaking misunderstood about each other.
Yeah, would you say also that poets back in the day would be more philosophical than poets today?
It's only natural. It's only natural. You think of what these people who were, let's go back to the early, the 1800s to the 1900s. There wasn't that much technology, They didn't have that much advent of technology. So they had to really basically, improvise and really be studious as well. So the writers back then, the poets in particular, they didn't have much exposure as what we do now. We have the internet, just imagine what these people could have done back in those days. And so they had to be more creative. They had to be more intuitive, use their intuition, and they had to be, it was just no other outlet. They didn't have any other outlet. So there's one thing, if I can say, that still remains in us. It is, well, I would say for some select a few, but those who choose to write about nature, that is the one beauty that we still is beholden to us, that we can still write about and write damn good pieces of nature. I used to write those when I first began writing. You know, I've got so many pieces of those. And that is in itself the beauty itself, because you can go outside, my friend, and be inspired by nature itself, or even a portrait of what has been done, you know, by several of these poems here tonight, and be inspired. And that's still beholden to us nowadays as a poet. We still have that. We haven't lost that essence there. We just lost the interest in many to do that.
Yeah, that's true. I love looking at the old master pieces. I love looking up close, the brush strokes and the color changes in the shades and how they did it. Just appreciation. And you know, they had to be, like you said, they didn't have much else. Basically, they had vessels to put things in, to cook things in.
Yeah.
Separate things. Other than that, there's not a whole lot for hundreds and hundreds of years. Man,
and they did
much,
a lot of reading as well. They did a lot of reading as well, Hatter. You know, you think about it. I mean, routine, your habits, you know, when you had free time, you didn't have much exposure of, you know, diversion. So diversion was, for many, growing up as a child in those days, were reading books. That's the key. That's the thing.
Sure.
We've lost the essence of wanting to read books. You know, we Google everything nowadays, and that's the difference, the great difference from what was before to what is now, our society, when it comes to poetry and writing, literature, art, etc.
The senses, I think, are dulled by non-use. There's a quick story. About the scouts in the army. What they had done is there was one sergeant or colonel that believed the scouts, they wanted Native Americans, Native Indians, to be the scouts, being that they had the ability to sense their enemy, sense the presence. Now, they didn't have to see them, smell them, or hear them, but they knew they were there. That's a sense of survival that would probably be lost in our own brains because we don't need it to survive like back in the day. There are a lot of issues from other generals or other people in the military that didn't believe that and said the American Indians grow their hair long. Everybody else had to have the military cut buzz, and they were wondering why the Indians, at least because that's their sensors. So the Army did a test. They tested this theory. They took Native Indians and they cut their hair, butched it just like everybody else, and put them out as scouts. And then they kept the long hair, and the ones that kept the long hair had the ability, what they called presence. You were able to feel it, whether it's you feel something living approach you, their aura, their electromagnetic aura that's around them or whatever it was. And they tested them, and it was almost 100% that the ones that kept the long hair was able to keep this ability. If you think about it, it's the closest thing we have to our brains. There are certain other I didn't want to get too deep into that subject, but they tested it, and I truly believe that there's a lot of things we don't use and we lose it. And it's not just that, it's the little things that go along with it, the appreciation, like you said, of walking out and appreciate the nature the way it is. We're losing
it all
that starts, too.
It all starts with,
goes with,
you know,
it.
If I can say really brief here, there is, I do make a difference between, when I say the word education, you know, everyone thinks of school, the university, and so be it. When I say education, I mean that of what we are taught of, you know, not necessarily in a book per se, but that of what we were taught as children. And in your case, I mean, in the case you referenced there with the Native Americans, a lot of those Native Americans were taught education, not primarily from a university or a school, but from their elders, the chieftains. Sure. They inscribed in them what was the necessary thing, the education that was necessary for them to survive. Live off the
yeah,
land.
I truly believe. In fact, I should grab that article. It's written by this doctor's wife who witnessed this thing with her husband. And at the end of the day, the husband never cut his hair again. Let it go on. So he went from a non-believer to believer. I've always felt I used to cry when I had to get my hair cut. My whole life, I hated it. Absolutely hated it. I felt something was taken from me. I didn't know what it was or what was happening.
Yeah, I remember how bummed you were when you cut your hair for Oz and then didn't get to go because of COVID. So you cut your hair for nothing, you poor baby.
Yeah.
I used to have long hair for 20 years. Then I cut it, and it was just a matter because I had to. I was forced to, unfortunately, because of a situation of a job that I had to take that I had to cut my hair. So for 20 years I had long hair, and then I cut it one day because I was off a position that did not want me with long hair. So I had to think of, at the time, I was married, and I had to put my pride to the side and my ego, to some extent, and offer my humanity here, and I did. So there comes a time in your life, my friend, where you have to, unfortunately. It's not because you choose it.
Sure.
It's imposed upon you.
I know a lot of people think that men with long hair are hot, and that there's a handful, but personally, I've seen men that have long hair and then cut it to a regular, you know, shorter cut. And they were so sexy that they should have done it long before that. Anyway.
Well, I already done that, Dad. You see me in the picture there, so you see I still gonna.
So, AP, do you want to read your other poem? And then you can tell Hatter what's happening on Friday?
Surely.
I'll stay for one more piece. I'll stay to listen to him, his poem, then I have to run afterwards.
This is the original one, Deb, that I did from the Word Bank. They hang on to wings. It goes a little bit like this. Over hedges was their aim across the blooms and blossoms. Mulberry turned periwinkle's fame and they stayed awake with the possums. Clouds into an array below, past clusters did dotter in charcoal. Their state to climb on past ivory grove, in turquoise shade to their wooded knoll. Poets hang on to the wings. By brook or streams, less eggshells, in teal or clover dust, minor stings, to a hyacinth promise of dainty bluebells. End poem.
Now you have to know that this one is my favorite of the two, because it's so gorgeous, and because periwinkle's in there, and because especially the ending there, poets hang on to the wings by brook or streams. Less eggshells and teal or clover, dust minus stings, synth promise of dainty bluebells. It's like here's that word coming out for me again tonight, but there's an enchanting feel about the ending there. And although I get a little leery of heights, I often wonder what it would be like to have butterfly wings and soar around. So it made me feel kind of whimsical there. But another beautiful use of the word bank. But yeah, it's my favorite of the two.
Thank you.
Pretty good. Yeah. Pretty picture. I hang onto wings. I'd be a bitch to take care of, you know, graffiti and all around them. Never get AP. That's the blossom.
I kind of liked it, Hatter. I thought it was a nice sort of second birthday poem. I sort of thought about a team of voices as a butterfly and sort of flittering around to new spaces.
You're so good at that, you know, adding a couple extra ones. Totally appreciate that. I'm exhausted after I finish one. I'm sort of in a slump lately. I did pull up one before we lose that bit about the hair. I wrote a piece about it. I'd like to, it's not very long.
Oh, okay. Oh, cool.
If you want to go ahead and hit what's going on Friday.
Well, yes, I did. I was going to, we've got a gap in the schedule, so I'm going to step in on Friday, and I'm going to be doing the great little topic of critters, Patter. Critters is the topic for Friday. Critters. And I'm going to be doing some Guess That Critter or Critter Cash through the show too. So I'm going to be giving away points.
Right.
Name That Critter as
right.
we go through and do Critter Poems. Critter Poems, Critter Cash.
There you go.
Sounds really cool.
That sounds really fun.
You should put up the topic.
Australian
so
critters.
Can...
U.S. critters. Yeah, so I'm going to set up the topic. But apart from that, I only worked it out about 7 hours ago. So anyway, that's all good. We'll do it.
And you only have about 6 million critters to choose from in Oz, so
that's exactly
that.
Right. Exactly right. Yeah, exactly.
And 10 to 1, we all learn about a bunch of new critters we've never heard of before, knowing you. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, we'll get there. Believe me.
That puts it on about hair. It's called A Little Girl's Fears. I posted it up there. It should be there. It goes like this. They watched as she smiled with a scarf on her head. She played with her doll from her hospital bed. She didn't seem worried or crying inside. I heard in just weeks she was going to die. Her parents sat near, forcing their smiles, living this life's hardest of trials. I spoke with her father, and the secrets he had kept behind his hands were the tears he wept. Between the cries of a sad young man was a grief so hard to understand. He spoke of having to honestly tell his daughter and how she would never get well. It must have been so hard to hear. Expected his words to make it quite clear. How do you tell a sick little girl how she would have to leave this world? The tears, she told me, the most peculiar thing. He said she didn't cry. No tears did it bring. What she most feared was losing her hair. The illness, it seemed, very little she cared. I watched this beautiful young family dealing with the worst of life's reality. So I promised myself from this day on, I'll grow my hair until it was long. A wig to weave for my father's tears and to ease the pain of a little girl's fears. I learned I have the privilege of having hair that is perfect for wigs for kids. So I grow it long and then I usually cut it for wigs for kids. There's a couple different agencies.
Not
only problem is I gotta have 10 full inches now. At least we didn't have to have it that long. Now they want 10 inches. And I got to go down the middle of my back almost. But it's funny how, it's not funny, but it's interesting how she was more worried about losing her hair than anything else.
I actually remember this one from Robert's show. It's so touching. I look at the photo of that little girl. Look at her smile. Between the cries of a saddened young man was a grief so hard to understand. He spoke of having to honestly tell his daughter and how she would never get well. This was the beginning of the Marshmallow Poet, if I remember correctly. He grabbed everybody with this one.
I wrote that for a contest and I, with my phone, I can't see if I won anything on it. Did I?
You got a bronze from the poll, from the contest giving.
Cool.
Oh, wow, that's already, yeah, it's already on my list. From it's been on my list for 4 years. Yeah. Powerful stuff.
I just had to show about the head.
Can I comment before I go?
Of course you can.
Yeah, first of all, I apologize tonight. I'm just a bit exhausted today. I had a long day. But this piece here, when we were talking about long hair, I actually gave my, when I did cut my hair, I actually gave it to a cancer survivor. I don't know because I donated it. From what I understood, it was given to that person. And this piece here just remembered, just made me think of how insignificant it is for us who dwell on hair, and yet we have... people, individuals, in this case, this young girl, who just would love to have a lock of hair again. And this whole tragedy of what these children suffer, you know, cancer and so be it, it is very, very visceral. It's very hard to not be taken by this poem here. And I think you did a great job here of being a voice. I've always said that our poetry not only has to be something that we talk about our experience, but we have to be a voice as well for others. And you did an excellent job of conveying that here. You gave voice to a lot of little girls like this who are suffering in this circumstance. You did an excellent job, my friend. And I'm very appreciative of this piece. I have to say I tip my hat off for you.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you very much.
All right, my friends. I must go now. I've got to get up in the morning, but I thought I'd stop by really quick and share some time with all of you. Take care, my friends.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure having you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks
nice
for calling.
My friend.
Thanks.
Take care.
Yeah.
Take care, Deb.
You too.
So, Deb, I saw, was that Crystal?
Yeah, she's at work, and she was going to call in and read hers.
Okay.
Actually, all we have left is KBMW and Crystal's poem. KB asked me to read his for him. So I guess I'll put that up and read it. And then you just talk a bit until Crystal comes to read hers.
Okay.
There it is. And his is from... His is a carryover from last night. He doesn't have it. I had to put the picture on the board because it's kind of cool, so you guys can see what he wrote, too. Have it there in just a second. Where's the fried egg? There it is. Okay. So this is what he wrote, too. It is called 43365, Skeletons with a Fried Egg, by KBMW. Here we go. Chocolate lovers, grandpa, grandma, enjoy trips. Robin's wing dances mad on blossoms sprig. Peaceful, life knitted on shelter with marriage clips. Crazy couple survived the dead desert ring. The lady with two cigar kisses, roses for man. Giant blackbird showered goldenrod for them. Grandpa called her and served milk from a can. Looked shy, yet finally kisses. Sun roamed and it's noon, time for terror storm. With name of devil, typhoon dances on fire. The chrome winds destroyed fireplace and little dorm. Grandpa, parchment eggshells, yet she felt tired. Hour of death, no shelter and drop of water. Died couple, half pathway, leaves eggs for an altar. End poem. well. That poor couple got stranded in the desert and died there, but not before frying an egg under a rainbow in the sand and heat. Pretty cool. I had to laugh a little about the marriage clips and the dead desert ring. I have a kind of a feeling there that maybe he's not the biggest fan of marriage. But it was really cool. And KB, I'm just honored for you. Great job.
Got to ask, what do you think the numbers mean? 43rd day of 365? Or?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I guess that'll... I have noticed if you look to the right...
Just about St. Valentine's.
Yeah.
That'd be just about St. Valentine's Day.
Yeah, well, if you look to the right, they are 37 of 365, 38 of 365. So I guess maybe he's trying for a poem a day, and this is number 43.
Oh, okay. Poem a day. Sure. Yeah, I never tried that. That seemed to be more prevalent back a couple years ago than I see now. I suppose they still have them. Poem a day.
I'm asking my computer, when is the 43rd day of the year? February 12th. So, yeah, that's a clever way to date it, I think. Huh.
Yeah, I ran across a poet. I just spoke with him once or twice. I believe he used to write for the shows. I don't remember his name, but he always had this something on his title that didn't fit the title nor the poem. And so I asked him one time, why do you have these? It's the way he categorized them. It was under a certain category. He could tell by the title in his own way. He had a, I wish I could remember the word that he used, but it was instead of A, B, C, or D, or 1, 2, 3, he used like blackbirds or funny sounds or something just to categorize it. Odd but true.
Yeah. That's kind of cool. And before AP comments, let's say hi to my little sis. Hey, Crystal. Welcome
hi.
To the show.
Hi.
Glad you're here. And your timing's perfect, doll, because yours is the last poem. So I'm going to let AP comment for KB, and then we'll get your poem on there.
Thanks, Deb. I thought it was a really interesting piece, but the structure was the thing that got me. The sonnet is a very, very difficult piece to get right, and you have to have a particular type of rhyming, a particular syllable count, and you have to also use iambic pentameter, and the word bank to be fixed into a structure like that where you've got so few lines and they've all got to be rhyming. It was impressive that he managed to get all of those word bank and colour words and descriptions in to something which is so specific and gives you so little room to move. So it's very well done.
Great comment. And Crystal Hope, your poem is on the board.
Very fresh. Go called Crimson Petals Pirouette. And then here we go. Crimson bristles paint off your cheek and the curve of your lips tickle. Pearly white teeth beckon off the sun as your sapphire eyes trickle. Petals twirl off verdant forest vines. Off the honeysuckle garlands it shines. Your voice whistles like wind chimes, and I remember you're mine. Fragrant golden smells tingle as yellow seeds blossom off your skin. Your hand bounces off of mine, kissing the sunshine and cupping my chin. Scarlet smiles carry off emerald's embrace, and the stream of your eyes I chase. Carnation echo off your ivory face, and I pirouette to that place. End poem.
Oh. Yeah, all about the face. I was one that would always touch your face, cup your chin, touch your cheek, kind of thing. Been a while.
This is gorgeous, Crystal.
Thank you.
I love the title, Crimson Petals, Pirouette. But so many great pieces. That your voice whistles like wind chimes, and I remember your mind. And the end there, scarlet smiles tarry off emerald's embrace, and the streams of your eyes I chase. Carnations echo off your ivory face, and I pirouette to that place. So beautifully romantic. Aww. I love this one.
Mm. And thanks for calling in during your work.
Well, I'm actually off of work. I got off of work like 30 minutes ago or so, but work's been draining me, so I needed a few minutes before I could call in.
Well, you've been working your booty off, so that's understandable.
Yeah, we're really short-staffed right now, and it's it's something else. I have to say, it's been just, like I said, just draining me. So, yeah, I make sure that I do want to call in the podcast when I can. So,
what field of work are you in, if I may ask?
I work in a restaurant. I work in a fast food restaurant, and it, when they literally mean fast food, it is you run around like crazy, and when you don't have a lot of people there, you have to run around even more. So,
yeah, not fast food. It's good food quickly.
Yeah, I guess.
I think that's from Ridgemont High, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. All right.
What are you now, Spicoli?
What is it? It's, what's
Potter
his name?
Spicoli.
I used to do a good Spicoli, man. Just a hand. Yeah, Spicoli. It was the older, it was the judge, whatever his name is.
Reinhold.
He does what he gets a new job with at the hamburger place. No fries before it's time.
Oh, good burgers? Good burgers.
What?
I think so. Get you good burgers, something like that. How about
so is it AP Hope, me and you? All we got here?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, cool.
Just the four of us. And that was the last poem. Let's let AP give Crystal some love.
I actually thought it was beautifully written, Crystal. It had a really nice sense and feel to it, particularly the ending there. And I find I can't write like that unless I'm in a reasonable sort of headset position myself. So I sort of read into that things are going okay for you. So because otherwise you wouldn't be able to finish a poem as elegantly and eloquently as that. So I hope I'm right.
Yeah, you are right on that, AP. I normally don't write romance, but let's just say I've been feeling it kind of lately, so I've written more of it.
I can hear you smiling.
Yeah,
do you see the light at the end of the tunnel at all with the staffing?
What was that, Heather?
Do you see the light at the end of the tunnel? As far as you've been short-staffed, hopefully that'll change, right?
I would say I have someone in my life that helps me right now to see the light at the end of the tunnel. So, yeah.
There you go. There you go. There you go.
I'm so happy for you.
There you go. See, that's
that
perception,
cool.
Deb. That's perception, and that's nicely, let's see, beautifully done. There you go.
Definitely perception.
and
hearing her smile is awesome, too.
It is.
For those who just stumbled across this, who've been listening, this is ATOV Radio, your poetry group from allpoetry.com. You should do that every 20 minutes or so.
Like I have time for that. If I didn't.
Well, even on the when I was a dispatcher for 911 emergency services. Yeah, you got to do your call signs whether you're busy or not. KNGI 2AP.
There you go. Well, don't forget about critters on Friday, then, Hatter. Critters and critter cash.
Yeah. That's right.
When in doubt, go get yourself some critter cash.
Sounds like so much fun.
It's going to be good. It's going
to
be good.
It means a lot of work for
you,
too, though, to look up the clues.
Nah, that's easy. Compared to doing thick black poets like, you know, shredding peas.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. That's true. Did you work your tushy off on that?
That we used to play? Was it you, Deborah, that would
Deb used to
have the trivia and you had to type it in?
Now I mostly just pop up on the chat wall now and then and do trivia there and give away points. 200 points per question.
Yep.
Gotta have a point giveaway on one of my shows. Gotta figure something out. I got a ton of points.
Well, I sent 150,000 to Mark for the Winter Park, and it's been
moved
from April. It's been moved from April to October this year. So
they'll
get a little notice until then. Yeah. Because they really, it was nice to have the virtual one, it's more successful, of course, when the artists are there and
person.
The people. Yeah. So they're trying to pick a date and give it time to clear up and all. So there's that.
So the idea... So the idea of us writing some pieces and then having the painters grab one and paint to it didn't work out?
Well, no, it's not that. It's just usually you can walk around Winter Park, which is, I'm sure you know, a town in Florida, and there are artists that are setting up with their easels and they're painting the scenery. And then they sell the art for the museum. I believe that's one of the ways that they raise funds for the museum. And I'm sure he was doing it before I got here, but when I joined in February 5 years ago, I entered the very first one that April, and I was like, actually, that's how I met Titus, because he was one of the judges. And my poem started out with Zephyr Fluxes. It was a beautiful storm over a lake, and I won gold. But I got the best comment that I'd ever gotten in my entire life at the time from Titus. He couldn't believe that I had 11 syllable in every line and that I carried it out through all the stanzas. But by the time he was done with the amazing comment that he gave me, it stuck with me forever. But that's how I met him, through the art contest. And everybody was so excited
when they were telling me, oh, you're going to enter the art contest, and I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And it's something that people look forward to every year, and it's a lot of work. And I think that Mark and the guest judges that he chooses each year do a phenomenal job. I always look forward to it. Most of us do, you know. And, I've meddled twice, but my twin, Miss Becky Friend, got a hat trick going. She won 3 years in a row. I can't remember what they were, but
yeah.
3 years in a row she meddled in the art show. That's fantastic.
Wow.
I have the gold and I have an HM.
I think my first year I entered was my best chance. Since then, I've over-edited my piece to where it was, I destroyed it from its original feeling, you know?
Yeah, a lot of people do that. It's a shame. Like, I turn around, let me see. This will be my sixth when it pops up. But because the art is so gorgeous, even though I've only been in 5 contests, I have 54 Winter Park poems because I just, you know, I do my entry, but then I just keep going. Like, let me see. Last year, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Last year, I wrote 11 poems.
Now, the artist sees those, right? The artists, they see the extra entries that you put in, right?
Yes, because we have to put their name in the title so that they can log up. That's why they ask us to uncheck the box.
Open
a lot of people
this.
Only allow people that are members to see. And for
yeah.
the
Correct.
Contest, you have to uncheck the box so that non-members can
Everybody
see.
Everybody can see. Yeah.
Yeah. And it must be pretty cool to log on to a poetry site and scroll through the pages and see your name all over them because you have to put the artist's name in the title. So
in the title, yep.
If I was the artist, I would definitely want to see what people were writing about my poetry. Actually, I was really disappointed because one of my favorite artists is Jeff Ripple, and he wasn't one of the artists on the last one. I was a little bit bummed, but there are so many gorgeous ones. And Peter Pettigrew is amazing as well. They all
Pettigrew,
are.
I remember that name. Yeah, I remember
Ripple?
That name. Pettigrew. Yeah, I think Mary O. Smith was the one that has caught me for 2 years. To the 3 years, 4 years I entered, 2-3 years I entered.
Yeah.
She's quite the artist also. Yeah.
1, 2.
That'd be cool
three,
just to
four.
watch them paint. I was surprised to hear that they're smaller. They're actually small.
Some of them are. Some of them are like an 8x10 photo. I mean, there are bigger ones, of course, but imagine the skill it takes to put the kind of detail in the painting that these people do on a little 8x10 canvas. Unbelievably great. But like I always say, that's why I'm a poet, because I can't draw a convincing stick figure. So I have to – that's why I was so excited when AP turned me on to shape poetry, because it's about the only way I can draw.
Well, me too.
So anyway, what do you want to do? I deleted the board, and we read all the poems, and you said you didn't want to push too hard, and I don't want you to relapse, so
how
about we blow this pop
well,
again?
Just
towards the end of the day, I start fading. I try to stay up. It's so easy just to lay down and sleep all day, and that's, I'm not supposed to do that either. So... Yeah, you know, I'm refusing. I'm in denial that I'm getting old. That's what it is.
I'm not in denial, I'm getting old.
Yeah. Sleep's overrated, yeah. Man. You got eternity to sleep. Yeah,
I get that, but I'm telling you, it's clearly obvious to me I'm getting older. So anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, whether we want to or not, right?
Yeah.
So how about if you pick out a song and play us out of here with it? And
okay.
AP, I'm looking forward to the Critters Friday, so I can't wait to learn about
the
news.
Put the Critters up there. So. It's going to be fun.
Cool. Yeah, sounds awesome. And I sent you points, so you're in good shape.
No, thank you. Thank you for that too, Deb. Thank you.
You're welcome. And Hatter, pick a song. Let's get out of here.
Okay.
Forget about it.
Yeah, look out the window the other day. I have snow and ice all around me.
Ouch.
Yeah, we'll figure that. I can't scroll. You're just going to have to pick one for me. Let's see.
Tell me what you want to hear.
I'm here with you.
I'm with you. Okay.
You got it.
This is Avril Lavigne.
Thanks, Crystal. Thank you.
Okay. Have fun, guys.
Thanks, AP. Talk soon.
Okay. Talk soon.
Okay, and I'm using the search here with
Avril Lavigne. Avril Lavigne, right?
Avril Lavigne, I'm with you, a Canadian singer. And here we go.
I'm waiting in the dark. I thought that you'd be here by now. There's nothing but the rain, no footsteps on the ground. I'm listening, but there's no sound. Isn't anyone trying to find me? Won't somebody come take me home? It's that day. Thank you.
Thank you, Hatter.
Thank you, Deborah, for everything.
Talk to you tomorrow. Love and respect.
Yep. You too, Deb. Bye-bye.